So for those of you who are looking at the title slide, you will probably notice that I am not Kim Silas, who put together this lovely data set, but Kim couldn't be here, so I'm going to be talking you through this. You'll notice this is one of these sets that Scott was talking about. There's a lot of detail in here, detail that maybe we won't necessarily talk to, but Kim was trying to put together a resource that you can go back home and follow along with so that you can start processing this data. And for those of you who have already processed Grisman data in the past, this will be very familiar and, sorry for you. But for the rest of you, this will be very useful. Next, please. Oh, all right. So we're going to go over how to open and browse files, how to create and analyze spectra, and how to create custom visualization products. And all this material will be provided on the CRISM website, not the workshop website, but the CRISM website, so that you can follow along as you're beginning to experiment with CRISM data on your own. You actually have this as a resource so that you know how to use the tool. So we're going to start with a basic section. This will include the CRISM CAT installation, how to open and display Spectral Cube, how to display the spectra, how to open and display the summary parameter cube, and then how to link those two cubes together so you can browse through the data. We'll also go into a section on spectral analysis. It's dead again. When we're doing spectral analysis, cover certain things like how to select a region of interest and how to calculate statistics, enhancing these features, and then interpretation, the most important part. And then three, basically, how to make 3D pictures, how to take all this very cool data and present it to others so that they can see just how cool it is. This includes the custom RGB products, three-dimensional views, this is really cool, and mosaicing. Next slide. So we'll start with basics. So the CAT, CAT's already been discussed a couple times this morning, now afternoon, but the right up there, you have a website that you can go to download the CAT so you can install it on the machine. And as we were talking earlier, the CAT version 7.0 will be available on Monday. Okay, so this is just an example of how Kim put this presentation together. So it actually will show you what the NV screen will look like and kind of lead you down so that you can actually see the screens as you're going to do it yourself so you have a better reference to go back to. So right here, when you're starting Prism, you would go to this CAT tab, which if you download this most recent version of CAT, it will not say CAT on tab, it will say CAT 7.0. And you just click on that and scroll down to open Prism file and click on that. This window will come up. And you will browse through your data until you get to the place where you have the MTRDRs. This is the sequence where data is stored back at APL. But you will go to your own storage area. You can type it all in, or you can type in the first layer and hit filter, and it'll give you options and you can select. But what you want to do is actually select, you want to select that MTR3 data. And what will happen is three images will pop up. You'll have the image, you'll have a scroll, and you'll have a zoom box. So scroll shows the entire image in a small cube, and then this little red outline is how much of that image is showing up in the main image up here. If you take this corner and drag it out so that the entire image is showing up in this bigger area, this scroll square will disappear. That's actually a really good idea. Just do it. You don't really need to scroll. Just make this big. And then keep the zoom window open, because as you move around in this big image, it will zoom in on that area that's inside the box, so you can really get a sense of where different features might be and what you're really looking at when you are actually trying to get spectra out of this information. And so that zoom window is a 4x resolution subset, so it's really useful to keep that open. When you open this data, it's going to come up in a default band, where red is band 304, which is 2.5 microns. Green is band 122, which is 13, 29 nanometers. Might as well speak to its appearance of using microns. Band 41
So 7-6-8. This is basically the equivalent to that tan browse product that Scott was just talking about. So that's what comes up automatically. You can change these values if you want to, but this is what will just open. And then by default, NB applies a 2% linear stretch. There is a way to change what kind of stretch you're showing. Kim changed it to a 1% linear stretch for this image. And here she's just showing the zoom window that you're going in. Well, actually have some crosshairs if you click down here in the window. And that's really good so that you know exactly where you're pinpointing to get your spectrum. Next, please. And how do you get that spectrum? Okay, so right at the top there was a tools box. And when you click on that, this scroll down sheet arrives. And you want profiles. And then you want the Z profile. And the Z profile it will give you is from that place here, right in the center of the crosshairs. And this blue and green and red line is basically showing you the location of those three colors that you had your original image set to. So it's showing you exactly where that red value is and where the green and where the blue values are. And you can use them as good references as you move around the image and get the spectrum to change. So basically, you know, here in the background, you still have that image open, and as you move the cursor over it, this spectrum is going to change up and down as you are covering different areas within the image. Next one, please. Now you can adjust this image by opening up a plot parameter box, and here you would go to edit right up there, and then plot parameters, and a box that looks just like this will open. And here you can adjust your x-axis. If you click this x-axis area, the y-axis, you can make the lines thicker or smaller. You can change the colors of the lines all by playing in this plot parameters box. This is actually, if you want, if you keep this box open at all times and you have changed your x and y-axis parameters, as you're moving around in the image, the box will stay the same. So like, for example, right now she has this set from 0 to 0.35. If this plot parameters window stays open, when you're looking at the spectral plot, it will always be from 0 to 0.35 on the y-axis. If you close this, and you're scrolling around your image and looking at different areas and picking up different spectra, then this y-axis will change every time you move. If you don't want it to change, if you always want to be looking at that same y-axis range, just keep the plot parameter open. Can you go back, actually? One other thing to keep in mind, right here under options, you can change this from being a 1x1 pixel spectrum to a 3x3 or a 5x5 or a 2x10, by some reason you want a 2x10. Basically, this is just taking an average over a certain number of pixels and giving you the spectrum. And why you might want to do this, the larger the area that you average, the smoother your spectrum is going to look. A single pixel is going to have a lot of, relatively, a lot of noise. The downside of doing a really large box and averaging is you might lose some of the spectral distinctiveness. You're averaging more and more data in there. And so you might lose some unique mineral into a background averaging. So you kind of have to balance that out. 3x3 is a good one. 5x5 is usually okay. You don't want to get too large unless you have something that really seems really like a huge layer. But that is something else you might want to play with, is averaging these boxes. So try, try experimenting. See what happens if you do a 3x3 or a 5x5. But that's here under options, and then set Z profile average window. And we just change this. It'll come up one by one, change the numbers around, and see what happens. Okay, so this is just showing you some areas where you might find weird effects in your spectrum. We have some bad bands. These were at detector and filter boundaries. So like right here, this is where the VNIR and the IR have been merged together. There's a sweet sequence of sometimes bad data in here. Sometimes we get bad data in here. And then right here at 2 microns, we still get some residual effects from the atmospheric correction. So this is an area where if we don't do the that volcano scan correction that Frank was talking about earlier, you'd have that giant 2.0 micron CO2 absorption. It's huge. And we've factored that out, but you can see there's still a little bit of wiggle, and that's due to this correction. So that's an area you might need to avoid. Back, please. Just go back. I think I caught everything. I did get everything. All right, so now we've opened the actual data. Now let's open the summary parameter file. So here, it's the same procedure. You go to CAT, you open PRISM file, but this time you open the SU summary parameter file. And what comes up by default is the R770 summary parameter in grayscale. But it has a list of all of the other summary parameter options, and you can bring up any of them. So this is an image in Marfalis, and just as an example, if we load the 2300 parameter, now this is the parameter that looks for iron magnesium phyllosilicates, and you can bring that up in the grayscale, and it kind of shows an area that might be absolutely chock full of iron magnesium phyllosilicates. But this default linear 2% stretch actually has some unrealistic parameters, including values that are less than zero. And we don't want values that are less than zero when we're looking at this data. So what we do, I'm very sorry, we want, at the very least, we want zero to be our minimum value. We don't want less than zero. And sometimes for some of these other ones, we might want it to be higher than zero. The 99th percentile is usually a good maximum. And so this is one of those things that trial and error, you get a feel for as you play with the data. For example, 0.02 is a good minimum maximum for the D2300. And that's just something that people have figured out through trial and error. So to get it so we don't see any of these less than zero values, we go to enhance and then interactive stretching. And you can actually type in the minimum and maximum value you want, or you can slide these bars. Or you can come up here to options and scroll down and select histogram parameters. And that will bring up another box, which Kim isn't showing here, where you can actually just type in the numbers for the values you want to be the minimum and maximum on your stretch. So just as an example, here's the default stretch, which actually had minus 0.006 to 0.022. And then an optimized stretch where that minimum is now zero and the maximum is a little higher. And you can see that, you know, where we had lots and lots of features that were showing up in the D2300 stretch, while this image still has a good observation of iron magnesium phyllosilicates, it's nowhere near as prevalent as on the default stretch. Now, if you really want to, you can actually change this in color also. So here, Kim has put in a blue-red color ramp, which you can do by going to Tools, Color Mapping, and picking one of the NV color tables. So you can do any kind of stretch in there. So this is still just the D2300, but it's showing it in color. So like where red is would be the highest concentrations of this D2300 parameter, and blue would be where nothing is actually being detected. Now, that was an example of just looking at one summary parameter, but sometimes you want to look at more than one, and NV allows you to look at up to three at a time, and in Scott's summary parameter talk just now, you saw a lot of these default products that we're going to be presenting or adding to our PRISM map. Here is the location where you can make your own. You can do the ones that we know work, that we've been using and that we just talked about in the last presentation, or you can really just come up with anything on your own that you want to. And you would do that by loading select RGB color and click on whatever summary parameter you want in RGB. So for example, what Kim is showing here is our standard PHY summary parameter, our phyllosilicate search parameter. Which is the D2300 in red, the 2210 in green, and the 1900 in blue. So when we look at this color stretch down here,
Reds would be iron, magnesium, phyllosilicates. Green would be aluminum phyllosilicates, and blue would just be hydrated bands. So when we see a purple or magenta like this, we know we have an iron, magnesium, phyllosilicate that's actually hydrated, as opposed to pure red, which might be an unhydrated or dehydrated iron, magnesium, phyllosilicate. There are other standard RAS products we want to look at. Scott talked about these. There's this one for the Wiener products. We have our Makeit Stretch, which is the Olivine Index in red, the LCP Index in green, and the HC Index in blue. In an observation where we had lots of Makeit, you might see like some great deposits of olivine in these greens. There are LCP or HCP in greens and blues. This does not necessarily mean that there's olivine in these particular locations, because the olivine index also picks up iron, magnesium, phyllosilicates. And we already know from the 5 summary parameter that there's iron, magnesium, phyllosilicates in this area, so this is actually just supporting that identification of iron, magnesium, phyllosilicates. And when we look at the hydration summary parameter, which is frequently used to detect the presence of sulfates, hydrated sulfates. In this particular instance, all that's showing up is pure blue, which is the BD1900, which shows hydration. So we're just seeing the hydration in these iron, magnesium, phyllosilicates.
So what is here, the C-index? What is that?
The S-index, that's the sulfate index. So that's one of the detections looking for.
Oh, so you already tell that band available.
Right. So in this case, the fact that all we're seeing is blue and black indicates there's no sulfates in this particular location.
So probably the red is xeno, the syntax. Is it xeno?
I'm sorry?
The syntax is an image of xeno in the pixel.
For S-index, is it zero? Is that why there's no red showing up? No.
Yes.
Hey, Deb, there's a drink here for you.
Oh. Thanks, please. I lose my voice very easily, so unfortunately when I do these talks, I just start coughing, and my voice starts going raspy, so if I start sounding like I'm a smoker, you know what's happening. So, now what we want to do is link these images together. And why we want to link them is because we want to look at this cool summary parameter detection of aluminum phyllosilicates, and we want to be able to go over here and get a spectra of it. And that is most easily done if these two images are linked together. Very simple to do. You go to Tools up here. You go down to Link. You can do this on either one of the images to link them together. You can link the displays. And this is a pixel location link. So it requires the exact same image. Or, you know, they have to be the exact same size. There's also the geographic link. The geographic link can be used if you want to try and link something like high-rise data. And I'm saying that with actually having very little idea how to do this. Kim is the MV expert. I use MV, I am not an MV expert. I would love to be able to tell you right now how to do a high-rise image and link it to our prism, but I don't really know. So.
It should work.
It works. I've seen Kim do it. So if you need help with something like that, this advanced, more advanced sort of thing, there are people out there who can help you, and I'm sure James and Joe have probably done it, so there's more than just Kim to ask for help. Next, please. Okay, we're going to walk through a spectral analysis tutorial. So in general, there's 3 steps. You want to locate the interesting materials, and this is one of the uses for these summary parameters that have been so kindly provided to you, especially in the Prism Map tool, where you can actually like just go in and look at something that you yourself didn't even do, but it's just provided to the general public. And as you scroll through those, you can see areas with interesting materials. Then you want to collect the best possible spectra. So we'll go over this in pixel averaging and region of interest. And then you want to interpret these N-member spectra so that we can compare them to laboratory mineral spectra and actually identify what it is we're looking at. This is exactly what NV was designed to do. This is the reason we use NV. Not all of NV's tools work particularly well with the Prism data, but many of them do, and we'll go over those now. Next, please, Mr.
Sorry.
He's been... So,
for example, let's find the n-member spectrum for one of these phyllosilicates in this FRT94F6 that we've been looking at from Martha Alice. So right down here, we load D2300 as the single band in grayscale, and we stretch it to emphasize the highest values. So when we did the whole stretch, we went up to a maximum of 0.027. If we just look at that very, very highest range, don't go all the way down to zero, but maybe go to 0.02 to 0.20 or 0.27. So you're just looking at the highest, strongest observations. And you know, we go from this interesting scene to just a few little dots. Now, if we zoom in on this particular dot right here, and you know, there's the nominal stretch, there's the emphasized stretch, and we can see it in the spectral cube, and we can see it in the phyllosilicate browse product. Next. So from that linked spectral cube, we can get the spectrum by using the extract Z profile, and go to edit plot parameters and adjust the y-axis so that we get right in there on profile. And we can get this spectrum. And when we right-click anywhere on this particular image, we can get this window will come up, and you can select a plot key and set the Z profile average window to 3 by 3 pixels. So we have this image, and it's kind of small, but we want to get the biggest average of it we can. 3 by 3 pixels is just the right size to kind of fit into this small area, but still get a nice average spectrum. And then we can save that spectrum that we create by going to options, and then a new window with plot. So this will open a new window with a plot. So it's no longer linked to what we changed things to in the image. It is now a separate plot that is just of that spectrum. So that's one way of getting a spectrum of that high, you know, that highest n-member sort of iron magnesium phyllosilicate. Another way of trying to get a good spectrum that really, you know, screens the particular mineral that you're looking at is to do a region of interest based n-member extraction. So we are basically going to find an area, and we're gonna get all of the pixels in that particular area that have a high D2300 value. So we would go to overlay and region of interest, and then it'll open up this option for an ROI tool, region of interest right there. It opens up this box, and you would go to options, band threshold. And in here, it opens up this choice, and you can select the D2300 band. It'll give you a different range of bands you could choose. In this particular example, we're picking the D2300 band, and she gives you some minimum maximum values you can play with. So in this case, she's going to use 0.04 and 0.05 as the minimum and maximum. And gets a result of 198 pixels. So in this particular image, this whole image, 198 pixels have a D2300 value between 0.04 and 0.05. And this is something you can play with in any image. You can try different minimums and maximums and try and get the best data for what you're trying to do. So it'll show up as red. So here's the 100, and, you know, here's some of these 198 pixels, and then there's a few others up here on the rim of this crater. When you are in this image, you can now hit stats, and it will open up a box that looks like this that has a variety of spectra. It's all the same spectra, but what they're like the mean and the max and the various statistical anomalies off the side. What you really want is this white one in the center. And you can right-click and do plot parameters and view plot key. And when it opens up the new window, you can actually just save this mean threshold one in the middle. So that's another way of getting the spectrum of the primary, this n-member version of the D2300 phyllosilicate in this particular image. The third method is to define a polygon region of interest. So in the ROI tool, you can do ROI type and pick polygon. And you create a new region, and you basically are allowed to draw an outline of an area. So say you have an image and you can really see that there is a band of material that is showing up as a layer in a wall or something. So using this tool, you can actually outline that region, that layer, and then you can calculate the statistics on that polygon, on everything that's in that polygon, and it will come up with a spectrum of everything that's within that polygon. So now you have, so here we've got the red, and you can see the dots. You can then, if you want to, take your polygon, your region of interest-based extraction, and combine it with your band threshold extraction. So you had, in the last slide, actually go back to the last slide, or the one before, sorry. So in this version, remember we found these like little red dots here and there, and next, so here and here. And then in the next slide, we did a polygon on that same rim. So if you intersect them, you get only the only those members of the 198 pixels that were between 0.04 and 0.05 that are within this location, within that band. So you get even even fewer pixels, but even more positively from the area that you want to look at. Did that make sense? Okay. Next slide. Okay, so here we have all four of the spectra that we just created. So in purple, we have the 3x3 pixel average. And in red, we have the band threshold. In green, we have the polygon. And then in blue, we have the band threshold polygon intersection. And you can see they're actually all very similar. But for example, that one in green, which is the polygon, has 301 points. So if you can see it, it's actually a lot smoother than the others, just because there's more points to it. But it's also averaging in more diversity. So it is not everything in that particular polygon is the iron magnesium phyllosilicate. So it's smoother because there's more pixels, but it's also bringing in potentially other materials into your spectrum. So you need to do some of these and kind of figure out which one is really, you think, the most accurate. In this particular instance, they're all very similar. Next one. The band threshold one is higher. It's probably brighter because it's only looking at the iron magnesium phyllosilicates, where everything else is averaging in something else that was potentially darker. I have to say, when I do work, I usually do the band threshold polygon intersection because I would frequently be looking at, say, a particular layer, and I'm looking at a particular material in that particular layer, and when you do the band threshold polygon intersection, you're only getting, for example, iron magnesium phyllosilicates that are in that particular layer that you're looking at. So you get in the instances that I have worked on, that is the result that I want. But there are valid reasons to use the others. So you might have an area where you really want to know what's just in that box, and you're pretty certain that it's fairly homogeneous. So you want something like the polygon or the 3x3 pixel average, because it's going to give you the smoothest, nicest looking spectrum. And they tend to be more believable and convince people more efficiently. Excellent. So, once you have got the spectrum that you want and the spectrum that you're looking for, there are two ways to enhance that spectrum to aid in your interpretation. You can ratio it to a spectrally neutral area within the same scene, or you can do a continuum removal. The advantages to using the ratio is that this will cancel out any detector noise or spikes due to atmosphere or whatever. However, the problem with using the ratio is that you might add in some kind of error. You can add in something that isn't really supposed to be there. So broad features can be added from any nafix that were in your neutral area. You can add in a spectral slope, Wiener variability from some kind of ferric oxide-related feature because your neutral area had the ferric dust in it. So that is a potential problem with ratioing. However, continuum removal doesn't work over the entire prism wavelength range, so when you do continuum removal, it's best to just focus in on the areas where the absorptions you're looking for are. So ratioing. So we have the numerator, and in this case that would be that area of the polygon that we just figured out. And then we have to come up with a denominator, and this is, it has to be in the same image, and you just try and find the most spectrally bland part of the image you can find, something that is boring, if you can. Something that's spectrally bland, something that's dark, and you would go into basic tools up here, and select spectral math, and you create a formula. And the easiest one for ratioing is just S1 divided by S2. And it will let you select your numerator as S1 and your denominator as S2. And you say OK, and we'll come up with a spectrum that is the ratio of your area of interest divided by the spectrally bland region. So here's an example. We had our numerator. So this is the original D2300 spectrum. And Kim was actually able to find a really good denominator because here's our ratio-enhanced spectrum. And you can see these absorptions have become far more clear. Now, if we were going to do continuum removal on that same spectrum... Yes?
So, no column dependence on the denominator?
Not in these particular images. These images have been...
They're map projected.
Once they're map projected, the column to column is really difficult to do. So try and keep them in as close as you can eyeball, but it when they're not map projected, it's very easy to do the column. But once they've been map projected, it's incredibly difficult. So just do the best you can, but it's not really as necessary as it used to be. So for continuum removal, just basically we're going to examine those three wavelength ranges independently. So we're looking at iron, magnesium, pyrosilicates. So we know that the areas we really want to look at for absorptions are around 1.4, 1.9, 2.3. So we would do edit plot parameters, and you subset the x-axis region to just bracket that particular area. So right here, she's looking at the 1.4, so she really zoomed in to just look at that one particular area, and then chose plot function right here, continuum removed, and it will come up with a continuum removed spectrum, which for the 1.4 is not particularly good. In this instance, the 1.4 band was better emphasized by the ratio. Next, please. But when you do the same thing for the 1.9 and the 2.3, you get these really nice absorptions after the continuum removal. So once you have the spectrum that you like, the one that you want to use going forward, what you can do is save it as a spectral library. This is basically allowing you that the next time you look at that image, or really any other image, you can compare the image you just created, the spectrum that you are now saving, and saying that this is an iron magnesium phyllosilicate in this image. And you can bring it up in any other image you look at so that you can compare it to phyllosilicates in other parts of Mars or around Mars. And you would save it as an MV spectral library, or SLI, or you can export it as an ASCII file so that you can open it in Excel or whatever your preferred browser is. I usually save it as both. You can save it as many things as you want. Save it as both, that way you're covered no matter what you want to do. So you would go to the spectral plot file, save plot as, there's ASCII, there's spectral library. If you have a number of different spectra in the file you just made, and you have been keeping track of them because you changed the colors, it doesn't save the colors. So rename the spectra so that you can identify it. It comes up with this random name that includes the location of the pixels. You can change that. So change that to iron magnesium phyllosilicate in rim of southern crater. You don't leave it as X colon 253 colon 5. You won't remember what it is. Just change the name so that when you open the library again, you know what it is you're looking at. And then when you want to go back and retrieve this saved library, you would. So here's that original, the top band of your MV file, you hit spectral library viewer, and then you select the SLI file that you just created. And there are also various spectral libraries saved for CRISM, and they're located in this location. So you might want to compare the spectrum that you just found with laboratory spectrum. So we have these spectral libraries that are already created that are spectra from various experiments done here on Earth. So various mineral types that we have actually looked at with, you know, actual sensors and know for sure what they are. So we can open up our spectral library and then open up this laboratory spectral library and actually compare our image. So here in white is the image we just found. And then in teal, we have a saponite, a laboratory saponite, and in blue, a laboratory nontronite. And Kim put in some of these dashed lines are basically showing the references from our Mark Vallis phyllosilicate and comparing it down so that you can see it compared to the nontronite absorption and the saponite absorption. And while it is not an exact fit to either one, it is a closer fit, a better diagnostic fit with the nontronite. So some common sense rules to apply to this interpretation. So all major absorption features in the spectrum of the proposed reference mineral should be present or otherwise accounted for. And the relative strengths and shapes of the spectral features of the proposed reference mineral should be replicated in the CRISM spectrum. So if you have a library spectra that has a particularly wide 2.3 band, then when you look at your Mars phyllosilicate, it shouldn't have a really narrow 2.3. Even if it's in the right location, you should try and keep that approximate size and those approximate locations when you're coming up with an interpretation. This is just common sense following. But something to keep in mind is that even a single CRISM pixel is unlikely to have just a single pure mineral. It is most likely to be a mixture of some sort, even when you're just looking at a single pixel. And remember, we're looking at 3x3 pixels or 5x5 pixels. And then there's intimate mixtures that can also occur. And then the geochemically intermediate phases. So simple explanations are usually best, but realistically, we're going to have some kind of complexity because it is real geology. So just keep that in mind as you're coming up with your interpretations and making your identifications. And now the visualization. So here's a custom browse product. Now, we were just looking at the D2300 is red, the 2210 is green, and the 1900 is blue. This is a very standard stretch. Here, Kim was having some fun, and she did red as the BD530, green as the olivine index, and blue as the D2300 on the same image. And so it's showing ferrous and clay variability. And there's many color units. And so each of these, this could be something where you go and you follow up. I mean, what is this green stuff? In the stretch we were just looking at, that was all red. That was only just showing that it was iron, magnesium, phyllosilicates, and now we're seeing diversity. So we might want to go in and look at this area as opposed to the red and see if we can find distinctions in the various spectra. And you can feel free. I mean, just play with it and really come up with something. 3D rendering. And this can be helpful for understanding the relationships between different units, which one is stratigraphically higher, which one's lower. So the first thing to do is to open the map projected DDR cube. And that would be done the same way we opened the summary primer file and spectral file. And the DDR cube will have this DE in it. So it would start with FRT DE is the number. And you want to load the elevation band. So highest resolution molar-graded data is oversampled to match the CRISM spatial scale. So the co-registration is good, but there are interpolation errors, and because MOLA is sparse in certain regions, you can get a feature mismatch. So what you want to do is note the approximate elevation range by going to Enhance and then Interactive Stretching. And this will tell you the elevation range and the area you're in,
save this, because you'll need it on the next slide. So you load and stretch the band, or an RGB composite of what you want to view in 3D. And from the image window, go to Tools, and then 3D Surface View. And this box will open. You want to select Full. You want to put in that minimum and maximum value that you just found out. You want to hit Full down here also, and hit OK. And you will get an image that is draped over the DEM. And you can actually, you can spin this, you can move it back and forth, you can zoom in and out, so that you can pretty much get it into the best orientation to show what you want to show in the figure that you are creating for your paper or your poster or your presentation. So that would be used with the mouse buttons under options, surface controls. And here, Pim's imposed a 5-time vertical exaggeration, so you can really start to see things pop. And she particularly picked this image to show you that there's a little misregistration here. So we've got this crater, and here's the low in the MOLDA data, but you notice it's a little off-center. So this actually has the center of the crater up here on the rim. It happens. Next, please. And then the last visualization tool that you might want to use is mosaicing, so that you can mosaic multiple prism images together and study a larger region than just the 20 by 20 kilometer cube of a single FRT. So you open the files, and then from the MV main menu, go to Map, Mosaicing, and Georeferenced. And it brings up this window, and you would import the files. So you import, and then import files and edit properties for the two cubes you wish to mosaic. It'll open up another window. Data values, ignore. You want to put in 65535. And you can mosaic the display of grayscale or band 1, or you can change this. Next. So what comes up are these two images. So here's the one we've just been looking at, which is an older image. It was taken at a nice cold temperature. And then here is a more recent image. I believe this one is at 125K, so it's a bit warmer than the older one. And we'll actually see this as we look in the mosaic. We can actually see the increase in noise. I believe Frank mentioned this earlier in the presentation when we were talking about noise, and he said that there would be an example of how these two side-by-side images that were taken at very different temperatures, and we can actually see the difference. Next. Okay, so here comes the mosaic. This is just the image data. It's coming up in the TanRep product. No histogram matching is possible in this. And you can actually see there's a few areas where there's some pixel offset. I'm going to say, for the most part, with these new MDRs, TRDRs, this one is actually sort of rare in that it isn't matching up like that. Because really, there's been a huge improvement in how these mosaic together. So Kim actually picked one that mosaics together less good than most of them do. And you can see it's actually pretty close. So this is actually a good thing. This is one of the bad images. And it's that good. Next, please. So when you put together the summary parameters, you can actually, here's where you can really see the noise. So here's that warmer image. See those green lines? As opposed to this one, which is nice and clean. But even though we know that this one is warmer, you can still see from the summary parameters that we still got lots of really good data in here. So even though it's warm, this is still a very hardy data set in this newer image. So that's all we have. This slide set will be available to you, so there's no way you could possibly, well, unless somebody has a photographic memory, go back to the slide set. As you're working with NV, experiment, play around, but use the slide set as kind of rules to follow, and it'll give you those step-by-step directions that you might need if you're not familiar with NV. I know I could have really used this when I started working with NV. So
we actually have one more thing.
There is one more thing. There is one more thing after this. But so visit the PDS forum, and by all means, download the slide set and let us know how much it helps.
Is it up there now or like next week?